You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Welcome to The Heat, Cinema Geekly's fortnightly wrestling podcast. It's Anthony and Jacqueline, back to talk more of the world of professional wrestling. It has been more than a fortnight, and no, we will not be covering the last month and a half of pro wrestling.
It's too much.
Too much to cover. Some people won a Money in the Bank contract. There was a Forbidden Door pay-per-view, which was like the... out of the three, was probably the third best Forbidden Door pay-per-view, just with a really great main event. And, yep, we've caught you up on the last month and a half.
Moving on!
As far as we know, there have been zero controversies or news. I feel like we haven't missed anything. However, one thing we absolutely for sure did not miss was WWE SummerSlam, because at the time of recording, it was last night. So we're literally just like 24 hours removed from it.
So,
let's talk about it real quick. This was the, since it was a, as the fandom likes to call it, a big four, I guess, yes. PLE. They had more than five matches on it, which has sort of been the standard for the WWE PLEs lately. This had seven matches, so we've added a couple, and it still felt light. The show felt long. It felt light on matches, but
I hear you.
Yeah, I mean,
they do so much like retelling stories.
The biggest problem with the pacing of these shows is, the number one, just tons of video packages, but also number two, the Peacock deal itself is one that if you are on Peacock, this was not an issue with the WWE Network, because when it was the WWE Network, it was their network. So you just got shows from beginning to end and you weren't really worrying about advertisers too much. But it's different now. There are ad-supported tiers on Peacock. So if you have an ad-supported account, they need to show ads during the premium live event. So the in-between matches are just padded with video packages and commercial breaks. And the shows feel very long, even with only seven matches. And look, maybe it's the devil you know versus the like that sort of thing, but I feel like I'd much rather get tired out by a long AEW pay-per-view where it's like, oh man, I just can't eat any more wrestling tonight, I've had my full. But it was so much wrestling, and
it's like match.
Yeah, these shows are like, I've had my full of just everything, because it's just so long. But like that longness isn't filled with like at the end, it's like, I'm not tired from wrestling. I'm just tired. I'm tired from sitting through ads or video packages, you know, whatever. And this is just sort of the beginning of my, I have issues with like the finishes on like almost every match on this show. And my biggest gripe is with the audience.
Okay.
I hated this crowd so much. And I don't hate very much.
Oh, they weren't that bad.
I mean, it's not even their fault, honestly. It's like getting mad at a child who says something bigoted because their parents are bigots. It's not really the child's fault, it's how they were taught. But I disliked this crowd. And just to, as like a broad general sweeping generalization, instead of mentioning it in every match that it happened in, which was quite a few of them, for the wrestling portion, the crowd seems like they were in it maybe at the very beginning of the matches, But then, like, if the match went on, let's say, beyond 5 minutes, they're just bored because they were waiting for something to happen. Yes. Now, for me,
because that's what we've come to expect.
Yeah, for me, an old timey dusty wrestling fan from a million years ago, for me, the I too wait for things to happen. But the things that I wait for to happen are the things in the fight, in the match. Like, I can't wait to see the next turn this match takes. But this was not this crowd in Cleveland. They were like, I can't wait for this run-in. I can't wait for this twist. I can't wait for this turn. I can't wait for this dialogue sequence. I can't wait for this finishing move to be hit. Like, to me, like, I get it. Like, that's how they were raised. Like, wrestling comes second, and the other stuff, like, supersedes all of that. But to me, I really dislike that, and it hurts so many matches on this show for me. I can't even begin to tell you. I thought it worked very effectively in the opening match. They did Liv. It was Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley for the Women's World Championship. Liv retained the title after our first of at least two turns, but maybe there were like three on this show. I don't remember. But there were at least a couple of turns on this show. But the first, but Dominic Mysterio turned on Rhea Ripley and sided with Liv Morgan, which was set up fairly nicely. There was
I did like it.
There was at least one wrestling trope that happened in here that I hate, which
is that the women fighting over a guy, because I hate that.
Well, yeah. Well, I did see somebody on Twitter that was like, is this like the most a women's championship match has failed the Bechdel test in history? Cause it kind of did. It's the don't worry about plot holes, fool the fans is one of the tropes in wrestling that I really hate. Like, fool the fans, like, make it seem like if everyone's expecting Dom to turn, we got to do something in the match to make them think, oh, he wouldn't turn. And that spot was when Liv went to do a tope suicida on Rhea, and Dom pushed Rhea out of the way to take the bullet for her, which doesn't make sense in context. Why would he save Rhea? Although, to be fair, there were some people on the internet who had some really great headcanon about this. Which, if they went into the detail to explain it, I'd actually be fine with. Because somebody was like, okay, but like, you know, they just happened to be in this position, and Dom was trying to screw Rhea, but like, this wasn't the time or the place to do it. You know, that sort of thing. Like, he made a, and it's like, besides, I'm sure he likes Liv landing on him, you know, like that sort of thing. Yeah. But I'm like, that's not part of the story.
And in all fairness, I did not watch all of the lead up to SummerSlam, but I did not think Dom was going to turn on Rhea. I really didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. That caught me.
I didn't think so either. But a lot of people on the internet did. But of course, when you've got anything, there's going to be a lot of people that are like, I think he's going to turn or whatever.
For sure.
You know, there was like a million people who thought Mercedes Moné was never going to go to AEW, and she was for sure going to WWE. So there's always going to be people like that just take one side or the other, and one side will be right and one side, you know, will be wrong. Yeah. Or people like us will just actually be surprised by it. Especially since they did that dive thing earlier, I really didn't expect it. But when they did the chair spot the second time, because the first time they did a chair spot, it was like, no, don't use the chair, Rhea, you'll get disqualified. Yes. And they did a really great near fall off of that. And the second time, it looked like he slid it in for her to use while he would distract the ref.
That's what I thought.
Right. And it led to Liv winning. And I'm like, they had done this before, actually, with Dom sort of like trying to help but screwing up. But then the camera shot where he like smirked or whatever. I'm like, oh.
Yes. Yeah, we did the same thing. And I was like, he played that off really well, I thought. So I think he's like really, but I see it though. I don't think you can make him a face.
Yeah.
Like at this point in time.
Rhea Ripley is supposed to be the face, which is, all of this is really funny considering the Rhea Ripley Dom relationship was never supposed to be a they're in love with each other relationship. It was supposed to be like Rhea is kind of just like, you know, dragging, like, you know, she found a boy to do her bidding. You know, that sort of thing. Like he's under her control or something, but it was never played off like a real relationship. But this won't be the first time tonight a story like this happens where it's like, well, they changed the story in the middle of the story because they like this better. I'm not a fan of the story that they're doing here at all. Like obviously the crowd is into it, but I hate, I hate stuff like this. So anyway,
not the biggest fan.
I think Liv winning though was a good idea because Rhea just coming back and getting the title back right away.
Would have been,
Yeah, and like I said, the crowd's super into this, so why not keep using it, I guess. Bron Breakker beat Sami Zayn to win the Intercontinental title.
Yes. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
It's match-related, but not specifically to the match.
Sure.
I find Bron Breakker incredibly boring. Do you think, if not for his family history, Bron Breakker would still be a big star? Like if he wasn't related to the Steiners, do you still think he'd get a big push? Because I don't.
Probably not for like
a
variety of, like, this is also assuming like he was still born to somebody with like a lot of great genetics and still would have been signed to WWE as like a great athlete or something.
With, same thing, not a Steiner.
Without the legacy, I don't know. I know that they really like, because he is athletic, he's really explosive. I know that they're trying to do this thing where he's like, you know, the Tasmanian devil or whatever, right? He's just like out of control, open up the box, and he just starts spinning all over the place and like just destroying everything in his path. I find it like hit or miss. Like sometimes, sometimes it feels cool. Sometimes not. This match did not help that for me.
No, they had a match.
Wanted
to be very bland.
Yeah, they had a match at Money in the Bank in Canada, which I thought was way better than this one. This only went 5 minutes and 40 seconds.
I know, it felt like double that though.
It felt short. I didn't think it felt long. Weirdly enough, I was like, this kind of felt like kind of a competitive squash. Like he just went in there and beat up Sammy, and Sammy got some offense and Bron, like it was a, like a nothing match. It wasn't impressive.
It was just there.
I know a lot of people, I know a lot of people were saying like, this is exactly the kind of booking he needed. And I disagree. Like if you're going to go more than the length of a squat, like an explosive, crazy out of nowhere squash is impressive. That will get people looking. A longer match where they do impressive work and athletic things that will get people's attention. But this was like a barely over 5 minute match where really not a lot of stuff happened. And then one guy just won. And this is the first time. It turned out as the show went on, there'd be lots of times where the crowd was flat, but they were very flat for this. And I was like, oh, I understand. I'm also flat for this.
Yes.
It was just weird. And I hated to see Sammy go out like that, but I know they were heading in the Bron direction.
But also only match that did not end with any interference. So kudos.
Holy smokes. Yeah. You are not kidding. Up next, LA Knight won the U.S. title from some guy who likes to hang out with Donald Trump and also Machine Gun Kelly.
Only thing I want to say about this match, though, is it is about time LA Knight got a title. Mm-hmm. Like, this man has been hot for too long. I feel like this took too long.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for him.
From like an athletic standpoint, this was the best match on the show, I thought. I don't know if you, I'm pretty sure you follow Trevor Dame on Twitter.
I do.
Yeah, he always makes some really funny and great observations. And he was talking about like, you know, Logan Paul is a great wrestler. Sometimes horrible people are good at things. sometimes mm-hmm. good people aren't good at things, like, you know, like, it's just right. how the world works. It's a shame because I dislike him as a person so much. But from trying to look at it in a vacuum, just as like a character on a television show, he put on a great yeah. performance. He's super athletic. He did this like springboard turnaround acai moonsault to the outside, which looked, I've seen a bunch of people do it, but it's a hard move to do. Like Kenny right. Omega does that move, and he right. pulled it off very flawlessly. They did a bunch of interference with like Logan Paul's goons at ringside and all of this other stuff.
Yeah, but, and that's where it took me out, I think, was I was like, God, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And like, It was too much.
The finish was great. He went for his buckshot lariat, and mm-hmm. he throws it so wildly. I was stunned that LA Knight caught it with his arm.
Right.
Like, it happened so quick and wild. It actually looked really cool. Because usually yep. when Hangman does it, like, he's in full control. Like, Logan Paul looks completely yeah. wild when he goes to throw it. But somehow Knight caught him and spun him into the BFT and pinned him and won the title. And the crowd seemed very happy about that.
Yeah.
LA Knight continues to surprise me on bigger shows. Yep. Like the WrestleMania match with AJ was like, whoa, where did that guy yeah. as a wrestler been? And he was in here too. And also, I guess I should note, Logan Paul almost dying on a superplex off the top rope because he did not rotate his legs very much. And that was very scary.
Yes. And watching it, I think it just showed LA Knight is such a professional because like he was not going to something happen. Like, you know, like he put in a lot of work in this match.
He tried to flatten him out as much as he could on that super yeah. match for sure. So, yeah, I was like, OK, the show's picking up a little bit. And then obviously we went into Nia Jax and Bayley territory. I do not like Nia Jax as a performer. And I don't want to say I don't like her as a person, but she holds some views that I would not want to associate with. But she's not like a Logan Paul level person. Bayley, I love to death. She tried so hard in this. There were a couple of really great. There were a couple of really great moments, like Bayley walking out of the corner with Nia for a powerbomb. That was super impressive.
Amazing.
But again, the crowd was not super into this, which at the time I was just attributing it to being Nia Jax. But then Tiffany Stratton's music hits and the crowd erupts. So I'm like, oh, they were waiting for something to happen. And she has Money in the Bank. And then tried to cash in, but it didn't work out. But then they played it off because I guess Nia and Tiffany are friends. They were playing it off
like a
distraction.
Yeah, like that's it.
Yeah. And Nia won the title. No one was happy about this.
No, and the crowd like fell silent.
I guess the idea, my guess is it's going to be like they're going to have this friendship, but Tiffany's the princess. Nia's the queen. She has the belt. And, you know, she's going to try to talk Tiffany into cashing in on Liv Morgan or something like that. Like, never on me, that sort of thing. And treat her bad. And then Tiffany will do like a face turn and then Money in the Banker for the title is my guess.
But,
I would prefer Tiffany over Nia Jax. I don't know. Do you have anything to add about that one?
No, my only thing with this one is that like, so I don't see Nia Jax being a champion for very long. And so, I don't know, I guess this almost seems like a transition time, I guess. So it's like, it's silly to me.
Yeah. Next up was for me, easily the biggest disappointment of the whole show. I thought this was going to easily be the best thing on the show.
Why would you think that?
Maybe not like the best in-ring match because Punk's in it.
Okay.
But like they were going to put together like a match with storytelling in it. Like not in the way WWE does it. I was thinking like when Punk and MJF had their strap match in AEW, like that sort of thing.
You're silly.
I know, right? After all the buildup, and they've had such great buildup. But here's the thing, is Drew McIntyre defeating CM Punk by pinfall with Seth Rollins as the special referee. I like, they have all the makings of such a great blood feud. And that's where I went. That's where I should have realized right away is like, okay, this is where I screwed up. Because WWE does not do blood feuds. And blood feuds doesn't necessarily mean that people have to get bloody in it. But right. It does mean like it's a violent fight. Like it's yeah. crazy. It's chaos. It's bonkers. No,
this was the opposite. This was so
well
slow. Lots of laying on the floor.
Apparently, halfway through this feud, the feud transitioned into being about a friendship bracelet that yes. Drew stole from CM Punk. Yep. And like, I saw people trying to convince other people who hated this. Like, I saw where their reasoning was coming from, albeit kind of flawed reasoning, because they kept sort of pointing out like John Wick, which is like, you know, you don't have to.
No one died.
Well, number one, true. But I think their point was like, it doesn't have to be a human. Like, it can be a thing. It can be a dog. Like, the thing that you emotionally attach to has, like, big, you know, big importance to you.
I'm so sorry. Were people comparing a friendship bracelet to a family pet?
Right. I'm like, number one, like, no one's going to, like, if it came down to, like, if there was like a burning, if Punk's apartment was on fire and
Larry. Yeah, is he saving Larry or a bracelet?
Is Larry or the bracelet? He's saving Larry. Yeah, he does not care about the bracelet. But like, I got what people were trying to say. Number one, John Wick sold the dog dying way better. And the movie he was in was way, way better than any story WWE could tell. But like, I got what they were saying. Like, you can attach sentimental value to anything. Apparently, this was a friendship bracelet, like a fan had made with, you know, Larry's name and AJ's name in it. Yes. And it has a lot of sentimental value to him. And I get him being upset about it. The thing is, I never saw any of that emotion, or I never saw the importance of this thing sold to the point where it's like, oh, okay, go get that bracelet back. Go kick that guy's ass. Like, go get that thing that's important to you. Like, I saw him try to justify it. He's like, this is cheaply made. He's like, you know, it's not expensive. He's like, but that's not why it's important to me. And like, you know, those are the words. Yeah, but I didn't see it in him. Like, this actually mattered to him.
Punk is not like,
the greatest actor.
He really has no passion behind him. Mm-hmm. And also, he has no chemistry with anybody. I don't know what that's about.
It's weird because I felt like he had a lot of chemistry in AEW, but it feels like it's, I mean, there is some chemistry kind of like with him and Drew. Some of the stuff that they've done, like the social media posts they were told to delete, were really interesting, like Drew McIntyre's picture with Jack Perry. Yeah. That was interesting. CM Punk had an even harder hit when he shared a picture of Drew McIntyre with Rob Feinstein, which I don't think people realize that's who it was. He was sitting at ringside on SmackDown, I think.
Who is that?
So he used to own Ring of Honor, or he was a co-owner of Ring of Honor. He used to be a ringside videographer for ECW, but then he helped co-found Ring of Honor. And it's very early days.
Man.
So he was caught by a local news channel in a sting where he was trying to meet up with an underage boy.
Yeah. Okay. Bad man. Yeah.
So bad man.
Gross.
But anyway, he stayed at the wrestler hotel and got a lot of pictures with people. A lot of them probably did not realize or recognize who it was. But Punk shared the picture of Drew with him on Instagram. And you can add music on the Instagram thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he added the, I don't remember the name of it, but it's the song about Drake. You know, Kendrick Lamar wrote about him being a pedophile.
Oh my God. There's so many. Yes. But yes.
There are so many of them, but it was one of them. And he quickly deleted that as well. Like, there was so much fire and heat behind this, I'm like, I cannot wait to see this fight. And then the match ended up really being about who can get along with Seth Rollins. Like, right. It turned into like, you know, and clearly they want to do a three-way or individual singles matches or something.
I don't know what they're doing. This is boring as hell.
The match outright halts it a couple times so we can get some dialogue scenes and acting, which is one of the things that I hate the most in WWE matches. And Drew ended up winning, which would have been my pick anyway. I'm actually proud of them for going that route. Yeah. But holy smokes, this was a big, huge letdown for me. And it was the longest match on the show. Oh, no, it wasn't. Second longest match.
The main event was.
Yeah.
This was boring. One positive I will say, Seth Rollins... Usually I hate the guest referee spot.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid. Referees actually do a lot of work that I'm like, it doesn't translate. But I do appreciate that he kept it to a traditional wrestling match. Mm-hmm. Like, did not allow weapons or anything. And I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I respect rules. I also was really surprised. I thought Drew McIntyre should win, but I didn't think Punk would take the fall his first match back. Good on him for not being such a jackass.
I gotta say, earlier in the day, before SummerSlam started, before Collision started, like, it was SummerSlam day, so I was trying to get myself a little picked up for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I went back and watched a SummerSlam. I watched a match, my favorite match from my childhood days of wrestling, and it was SummerSlam 1991. With Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart for the Intercontinental title in Madison Square Garden. And not only is the match still pretty good, like, it's not like as athletic as things are now. Although Mr. Perfect was like a template for people like Dolph Ziggler or Shawn Michaels, like the way that they bump and they take big bumps or like over exaggerated ones. Like, he was he made guys look like a million bucks. Anyway, not only was that match really good, but it made me long for the days the commentary team was immaculate. Like, I was finding myself getting involved in the match that I've seen like 50 times, and also cracking up laughing. Like, not because they were being telling jokes, but like, you have like this guy, Gorilla Monsoon, who's like this old wrestler who's like the straight commentator. He's trying to maintain an objectiveness. And then on the left side of him, you have Roddy Piper, who is still an active wrestler, but is doing commentary on this match. And he's trying to be objective, but he is clearly a babyface rooting for Bret Hart to win this match.
Okay.
And then on the right side, you have Bobby the Brain Heenan, who is maybe the best heel manager and commentator of all time, who was also just ridiculously quick-witted and hilarious. And they're constantly bouncing off of one another. But like, every time the match goes from one position to the next, like, if Brett's making a comeback, Piper's cheering him on, and like, Heenan is like, you know, is the time limit close to expiring? Like, trying to just like think of any way that like the heel might like survive this with his title.
Yeah.
And it's so like, it's so entertaining. And I rarely am one of those people where it's like, things were better in the olden days. But sometimes I see stuff where it's like, man, WWE used to be way better than it is now. Not always. Because there was a bunch of stuff. There was a bunch of stuff on that SummerSlam card. That card was headlined with like Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and a tag team, and I'm sure that match sucked. But there were things that were really great, and it's like, man, this show just feels so overproduced and plastic. It's tough for me to like love anything. But if anything was going to get me to do it, Jacqueline, it was Gunther winning the World Heavyweight Title over Damian Priest. In like really hard hitting match.
I was going to say, I actually really liked this match.
Me too.
Not something I normally like, but this was well done.
I still might say it's my match of the show.
This is my match of the show, for
but,
sure.
The ending really irked me. Because, like...
Oh, no, we all knew that was going to happen, though.
Well, I mean, the ending was the ending, but it's really, like, before that happened, like, everybody in the mm-hmm. crowd knew it was going to happen, too. So, before that happened, they kind of didn't really care about the match. Like, you could hear pockets of people being like, ah!
The crowd, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, you could hear pockets of people who were into the match, but, like, in general... The worst example is the next match, but we'll get to that. And I'm not saying the next match was really good either, because it wasn't, but it was crazy. Anyway, before we get there, these guys were hitting each other so hard. I got to give Damian Priest credit, because he made
Gunther bleed.
Like, really early from an overhand chop.
Yes.
And not just, like, blood vessels bursting, like, literal skin broke, and he had blood dripping down his pec. I was like, holy smokes. Like, he hit him hard.
I was commentating for the whole crowd on this because I was just like, oh my God.
Like, Priest has really shown up in the moments he's been called on. I still don't think he was a great choice for this role, but like when it comes to stepping into it and like working really hard, gotta give him the credit for that because he's absolutely been doing it. It was so weird because people seem so hungry for Gunther to be like in this position, and I'm watching this match and the crowd is just kind of like, you know, just barely with it. And then of course, Finn Balor shows up at ringside, and then the crowd starts buzzing because now they know something will happen.
Yeah,
and
we're all waiting.
You should have seen my grumpy face. I was just like, "Come on, guys! Like, you know, could you just play along? Like, I know something's going to happen here too, but I've been having fun up until this point. Yeah. You haven't been having fun, but no, they wanted to see a thing happen, and this is rough, and." Only because
they had to put Gunther into position.
It's hard for me. It's like, Damien, you did this to yourself, buddy. it's not really his fault. He hit Gunther with South of Heaven, and the plan was he's going to pin him. He's going to get to like 2 99/100ths, and Finn is going to put Gunther's foot on the rope because he's going to turn his back on Damien. But the problem is, Gunther has lost I'm going to chalk it up to this. He's lost so much weight. He's so much thinner than he used to be. So now when he landed, he was not close enough to the ropes. And Damian Priest, like a dummy, rolled him closer to the ropes. Not further away so he could secure the win. He rolled him closer to the ropes, which, man, of all the days to have a brain fart, I guess.
To be fair, I guess Gunther did land on his side facing the ropes. And mm-hmm. so he just took the harder route to get him on his back.
Yes. Well, anyway, Finn puts Gunther's foot on the rope and the crowd goes wild. Like they just saw an amazing match, but they didn't. They saw somebody put a foot on a rope, but they went crazy for that. And then
crowd likes what they like.
And then poor Finn Balor, whom I love dearly, had to like do a death stare at Damian Priest and then held it for what felt like 3 minutes. He didn't move and he just stared.
You know, honestly, CM Punk should be taking notes from Finn Balor.
I mean, you could see the emotion in his face for sure.
You could. It was there. And held it.
I just felt bad. Like, can I move yet, guys? And they're like, no, we haven't gotten the shot yet. It's like, just let me know. It's just making that grr face for so long. And then Gunther beats the crap out of Damian Priest, chokes him out, wins the title. Deservedly so. He should hold the belt forever until they retire it or something, because Gunther's great.
Probably.
I can't think of who would beat him off the top of my head right now. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on this?
No, I really enjoyed it, though. And I am looking forward to what's going to happen with Judgment Day fizzling here.
Yeah.
So,
Cody Rhodes defeats Solo Sikoa in the main event in Bloodline Rules.
I thought Solo was going to win this one. That was sarcasm. That was sarcasm.
Was it? Yeah. I actually thought it was probably the move until all the Roman Reigns is coming back buzz started showing up. I'm like, oh, then he's not going to win right now.
I mean, Solo wasn't going to beat Cody. Not right now.
I mean, I thought it would have been a dumb move too, but I was like, I could see them doing it to like solidify this new bloodline, but apparently they're going to crumble it quicker than that, I guess. So Solo has his entrance, and then Cody has this. If you thought the tracking shots before were long, you need to see this Cody Rhodes tracking shot, because it doesn't start with him in the back. It does, but it starts with him in the back, like on his bus
trailer. Yeah.
But we get a Pharaoh appearance, which I think he's never appeared in WWE before. We've seen him quite a few times in AEW, or at least I have. I think he made his appearances, I think, before you started watching them. But probably. Nice to see Pharaoh again. He also ran into Armed Anderson. And Arn's like, I talked to some people and I got some friends showing up for you tonight, so you're not alone. And the friends Arn got were the people Cody has been teaming with anyway for the last several weeks. Yeah. So I guess he didn't need Arn's help, but it was nice to see Arn anyway. Yeah. Cody goes out there. He puts on that helmet mask thing that he really shouldn't put on because it makes him look like a bobblehead or something.
I didn't understand it. Yeah, I was like, this is stupid.
Like, I get that it's like the Cody Rhodes skull thing with some wings or, you know, wings? Whatever. I get the vibe they're going for, but that helmet looks ridiculous on, because it is too big for his head. And it's also plastic, like really plastic.
Is it?
It looks really plastic. Well, I mean, it looks really plastic. There's like this really glossy sheen on it. So to me, not only does it look big, but it looks like a toy as well. And I'm like, he should not wear this out. He did it for WrestleMania as well. And people were like, what is he wearing?
But I don't know. I hate his logo thing. So
yeah,
but that's just my thing.
Yeah. People were like, what were you thinking when he got the neck tattoo? Just, you know,
yeah, that is still done. That still bothers me. Like, I feel like it's wrong. I can't explain it other than to say that.
The funny thing is Cody insists that he thought it was going to look smaller. To which I say, dude, you're really wealthy. Just pay for it to get, you know, removed and then just get it again, but smaller. But I don't know.
Also, as someone who has multiple tattoos, they put it on you first, like a transfer, so you could see how big it is. Like, and you have at that time the option to say, no, no, too big.
Yes.
like, you know.
Make it I bet he was like, I bet for sure he was like, badass. And then when people were like, dude, he's like, I meant it to be smaller.
I don't know. Yeah.
Nah, man, just own it. You liked it. It's fine if you do. Anyway, I did not realize this match was Bloodline Rules until the match was happening. Because I didn't see the buildup. I didn't see the last week or so of buildup. So that must have been when they added that stipulation in.
They did. We did watch Friday Night SmackDown this past week.
So. So obviously that is just an excuse for like an overbooked run-in fest. It really, and I am very vocally not a fan of how they did the WrestleMania match with Roman. I get that everybody loved it, but like I had no nostalgic connection to all of those people. So for me, it kind of just ruined the match. I'm glad the people who loved it, loved it. But even I can look at this match and be like, this is like we have the WrestleMania 40 main event at home. You know, the run-ins to this one weren't as spectacular until the very last one. Go ahead.
One thing I will say, though, really quick, we were watching as people were making their entrances, and the length of the hallway, essentially, they had to walk to the ring, because it's more than just a ramp.
Yeah.
Thank God Solo walks faster than some of his family members.
Yeah.
We would still be watching that match.
Yeah. So this wasn't a great match. I would say it wasn't even very good at times, but even by that standard, this crowd was so dead And I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point, being like, oh, maybe they're just tired.
It was late.
Because, like, they know things are going to happen in this match because, like, that's how it is. And then we had our run-ins. We had Tama and Tanga come out. We had Owens and Orton come out.
Tama and Tanga.
I think, are those their, it's Tangaloa, Tama Tonga?
Yeah.
Tangaloa, yeah. Tanga. The Gorillas of Destiny. Tangaloa, by the way, hilarious in this. He did one actual move, which was to like body check Cody into the turnbuckles, except he didn't. He like body checked him into the ropes and then had to like move him into the turnbuckles. This guy can't do anything right, and it's hilarious.
He can't.
And then Randy and Kevin cleared out those guys, and then naturally that was waiting for Jacob Fatu to show up and destroy Cody, which he did, and
badass.
Then probably got hurt for real, although there's lots of reports saying that he was supposed to sell the leg anyway, but maybe he still got hurt a little bit.
He's tag team champion.
I don't know either way, but I'm pretty well afterwards. It also made sense kind of that he would just sort of be taken out by injury and couldn't help when the next thing happened,
the return.
Yes. Of the original tribal chief, the OTC. He already has merchandise.
He already has a shirt,
and he had a slightly remixed version of his theme song. And when this happened, the crowd, I've never heard a crowd so loud. They were, it was like they waited this whole match for this. And then I'm like, why'd you guys buy a ticket to this show? Like, tickets couldn't have been cheap for this. Like, you just bought tickets to wait to see a dude make an entrance, punch a guy and spear a guy and leave? Like,
that's all like, that they needed.
Those tickets were so expensive. I can't even imagine. It's like if my daughter and I love my daughters, but if they were like little kids that were like, "Dad, I want to can you spend $600 so we can see Roman Reigns walk out, punch a guy, spear a guy and leave?" I'd be like, "No, I love you, but no. You'd have to sell me more on like why you would want to go to this show more than watch a guy walk in, walk out and in between hit two moves." It is crazy to me. Like, here we are in the year 2024, and he's finally getting the babyface reaction they were trying to get from him or for him, like, in the mid-2010s. Like,
that's wild.
They hoped he would be this guy back then, and it has taken until now for them to get this response. And the crazy thing is, like, I saw people, well, I guess I really shouldn't take reaction accounts seriously, because if they don't react obnoxiously, then I guess people don't watch them, which is weird because I feel like those aren't genuine reactions, or at least in part aren't genuine reactions, like the over the topness of it. But like these people were acting like, oh my God, Roman's been gone for 25 years and he's fine. Like, guys, it's just been a few months. He's just been gone since April. Like,
it does not feel that long.
It hasn't been that long. And they're just like, oh, finally, an oasis in the middle of this desert.
Wow. I'm going to need people to rewind to like a few years ago when everyone hated this man.
Yeah. Or thought he was incredibly boring, or the booking was so terrible. To be fair, Solo is not a great choice to be the head of the table.
No, but
honestly,
but he has put together quite the array of
characters
to surround himself with.
I mean, Jacob Fatu is a better bad guy, or even I don't think he's very great in the ring, but a heel Jey Uso has like would have way more charisma. Like, I would buy that more. Like, Solo just wasn't the right pick in my book. And I don't think he's a bad, a lot of people make him out to be like he's really bad in the ring, and he is not.
Oh, no.
Tangaloa is bad in the ring. Solo Sikoa is just there. He's fine.
Do you think that's why? So I don't know. Since you haven't been watching the run up to SummerSlam, I'm not sure if you know this. So DIY were the tag team champions.
I saw them win.
And they lost it
on the Friday before SummerSlam in Cleveland to Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga.
Yes.
And I find it funny that they are the tag team and not Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa.
His brother. His actual brother who he's teamed with for years.
Yeah.
And they're like,
we're gonna pass over you.
I feel, and in a way, I feel so bad for Tangaloa. Like they're in the back, and it's like, okay, the team is gonna be Tama Tonga and Tangaloa's like, yes, and Jacob Fatu. And he's like, aw,
nuts.
Yeah, it's so funny to me. So anyway, he speared him. Cody pinned him. Cody looked bewildered, like my greatest rival has helped me.
Well, he's not there to help you. He's there to beat up Solo.
Yeah, yeah. Because you could see he looked conflicted at the end. He's like, I just beat up my family and I helped my greatest rival, you know, that sort of thing. But they will need a fourth when they eventually do the Survivor Series War Games match. Because they are going to do Survivor Series War Games and there needs to be a War Games thing. And it'll probably be Bloodline versus Bloodline. Although if you're going to do 4-on-4 Bloodline versus Bloodline, I really think it should be Roman, the Usos, and Sami Zayn.
Oh, yes.
Like way more than it should be Cody Rhodes.
Yes. I just assumed it would be The Rock.
Oh, it could be The Rock. That would also work. Yeah. That team seems way too overpowered against the other Bloodline team. Unless they use that as an opportunity to make Jacob Fatu into like a big star. And it's like Jacob Fatu like beats up The Rock and Roman Reigns or whatever. I mean, I guess they could do something like that.
Ultimate line, yeah.
Yeah. But ultimately, if I were to do like a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumb in the middle for this show, it's a very hesitant in the middle for me.
Same.
Because there was stuff I really liked, but it was just, you know, like I'm struggling really hard to keep that thumb from going down because there were so many things that just were like, ugh. And
this is a catch the highlights show for me.
Yeah. 100%. Like all other PLEs kind of have, like there weren't actively bad matches, but like you have to really try to have an actively bad match on shows. Now you have to like knowingly put two really like not great people in there. And then hope they can have something good. Like, that really doesn't happen anymore. So like a show where things are just fine is kind of the new bad in a way,
which, I hear you
know, that's like an embarrassment of riches. Sure. But, it's kind of where we're at right now. Like there's so much great stuff that if you just see it's fine, you know, like then that's a disappointment.
So you were talking about, so I'm sorry, I'm going to pivot just a little bit, but you were talking about commentators before and, I don't know if you've heard or not, but they announced during the pre-show that Joe Tessitore, I think is his last name, is now going to be the new commentator on Raw because Michael Cole is moving to SmackDown.
Okay. And Corey's not going to be lead commentator anymore.
I don't know what this means for anything else, but
I mean, I'm positive that's probably what it means for him. Cause Corey was lead commentator and not on SmackDown. This will be interesting cause they have done this. They've done this move a couple of times now. There was the, God, I can't remember the guy, but I think he maybe did like UFC stuff. He had called Raw for like quite a while. I thought he was actually a pretty good commentator. I don't remember his name, but like this is at least the second or third time in memory that they've taken like a sports commentator, just plucked them from the sport that they called and just plugged them right into wrestling. And it'll be interesting.
I don't know if you have seen the show Holy Moly.
I've not.
But it is a miniature golf challenge show. It's hilarious. And Joe commentates it alongside Rob Riggle.
Oh, and, okay. I know Rob Riggle.
I recommend watching it for the two of them because he can play off of people very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he'll actually do okay.
All right. That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Steph Curry's in the first season. It's real crazy. This show is bananas. It's very good. I highly recommend it.
Fun. Okay. Yeah. Let's pivot again. Let's pivot away from WWE and talk about AEW All In, which we are continuing our build towards because it
still have some time.
It hasn't happened yet. No, we're actually still we're still like 20 days away.
Three weeks out. Yeah.
August 25th is when it's happening. More matches are going to be announced clearly. Well, there's one match that I feel like they're on the last collision they're probably setting up for, which is a three-way trios match with Patriarchy. It looks like they're going to do Patriarchy, Bang Bang Gang, and House of Black, maybe in a ladder match.
Stop it, because that would actually be amazing.
Yeah. So that's going well. They, in fact, had the trios title awarding ceremony that Christian held, where he talked about how impressed he is with Nick Wayne because, you know, he's a prodigy and, of course, he's his son. And he's like the second best wrestler in the world next to Christian. And he awards him with the belt. And he actually goes to Killswitch and says so many nice things about Killswitch. Like, you do exactly what I tell you to do. You're my, I named you after my finisher because I wanted you to be my finisher. And you do that. You do the dirty work. And he's like, I just wanted to say, I'm so proud of you. And he hugs Killswitch and doesn't give him the belt. And then goes to Mother Wayne. And he's like, gives her the belt because she birthed Nick Wayne.
Oh my god.
And Luchasaurus almost kills Christian. Like, he puts his hand on him to spin him around, and then as soon as he does that, the House of Black music plays, and then he goes into defensive mode to, like, you know, to fight them. So, like, they're teasing that split. They're constantly teasing that split.
That's going to be amazing.
But it was so funny that he gave Mother Wayne the belt.
What I have to say though, Christian, I think whatever he's been doing this past year and a half since, like, pretty much since he became the TNT title champion, like, the first time, he is, I feel like he just elevates whatever title he has on him.
Yeah.
And, like, so I just, whatever he is doing, it is like, it is working. Like, just keep it. I love it so much.
He made it clear. He made it clear his goal is the world title, but he promised his family that they would win the trios title as like an, as like a reward for being by his side.
That's amazing.
I just, you know, he's he's like, these are a stepping stone for me, but I promised my family that we would win these. So yeah, anyway, there are, so that match is probably going to get announced at some point, but there are five official matches
right
now, and we can talk about them. One of them is Timeless Toni Storm against the Glamour Mariah May for the Women's World Championship in a feud that's been really, really good. But the post-turn content hasn't been quite as good as, like, the lead-up to the turn and the turn itself, which was one of the greatest turns I've ever seen.
Agreed.
It was just unbelievable.
I think Toni Storm's descent, though, into further and further madness, though, is amazing. She's doing great. I think, it's definitely, I think Mariah needs to.
Mariah feels a little more comfortable. Mariah feels a little more stilted because they're kind of having her do this, like, psychopath kind of, like, you know. I just picked Toni Storm because, like, why wouldn't I? Like, I don't have anything against Toni Storm. Like, I love Toni Storm. It's like, you know, but. You know, is and I feel like that isn't the direction to go, but the best direction to go really muddies who's babyface and who's heel. Because to me, like, it's clear Mariah would turn on Toni at some point because Toni treated her like shit. But, like, they don't acknowledge that part of the story because Toni turned. She was so good at her shtick that she became a babyface. And now they.
So how do you do it?
I'm guessing they don't want to remind people by Mariah being like, I was your biggest fan. I wanted to be just like you. And you treated me like I wasn't even there until I started acting like you. You're in love with yourself. Like, you know, you didn't start loving me until I looked like you. You know, that sort of thing. And there's such a great, you know, and it's kind of half playing off of that All About Eve thing. And they really did play that up. Like,
they did.
It was about Mariah becoming her. and then outdoing her, like that sort of thing. But if they do that story, it paints Mariah as the baby face and Tony is the heel, yeah, and Tony's already getting massive baby face reactions. So the story feels a little muddy, although I will give some credit. Did you see, you didn't see Collision, this last Collision, but did you see the first Mariah May promo where she comes out as Timeless Tony with like the hair and everything, and she's standing there and a flustered, frustrated Tony Schiavone is like, he's like, just speak, bitch, or something like that. Just, and then everyone's like, whoa. And he's like, I'm sorry. I'm just so mad about what happened last week. And Mariah May was supposed to come out. Tony Storm was going to have a match on Collision and Mariah May was going to do commentary. And they played off of this, like Mariah's coming over for commentary, Nigel McGuinness losing his mind because like every inch gets closer to the desk. He's like struggling to keep it together. And Tony Schiavone is the lead commentator on Collision. And Mariah May sits down, gets right in Tony's face, like right up to him. And he's like, can I speak now, bitch? Like right to him. He's like, she's like, can I speak, bitch? And Nigel is like standing, clapping, laughing. I'm like, that was tremendous. That was maybe the best thing she's done post-turn. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to this match. I feel like the Wembley crowd is going to be really torn because they're both. Well, I mean, Tony's kind of like adopted British.
Tony. Yeah.
But Mariah is from England. Like, I feel like we're going to get a really split crowd. But I'm excited for that match. And like anytime they get into a brawl, it's like a brawl. It's fun to watch.
Yes. They do not hold back, these ladies.
No. Jack Perry and Darby Allin for the TNT title is official. I don't know what they're going to do here. Maybe Darby Allin wins. Darby Allin got this match by threatening to light Jack Perry on fire.
I'm not super thrilled about that. I'm still not a Darby Allin fan. Like, I just, you know,
see, I'm the opposite. Like, I do like Darby, especially like in the ring. But Jack Perry is the one that I'm sort of struggling to be like, I feel like he's still not quite finding his spot as like, he still hasn't found himself as a character yet. I feel like he's trying to get there, but he's not quite there. This is like, of the ones that are announced, this is the one that I'm kind of least interested in so far.
Same.
Then we've got MJF Will Ospreay for the time being AEW American Championship, but I'm pretty sure Will Ospreay is winning the title back in Wembley and the international title will return. Build up for this has been very good. I would say it's been really interesting to see MJF take a pro America character and then see the people from not America having to be like the baby faces. So,
my adopted home and everything.
And mostly because the idea is like MJF is full of shit or whatever. You know, I think he's trying to just maximize his heel heat in England or the best that he can. The problem with MJF is always that he's so good at what he does, like people cheer it anyway.
Like him. Yeah.
Because they just appreciate how good he is at what he does.
He's great.
Now, this will be the biggest piece of news for the Heat listeners out there. Will Ospreay was the international champion, but he lost to MJF in a match that went over, that went nearly an hour. And I can report here, breaking news, that apparently Jacqueline liked that match.
I did.
It's crazy. What was it like to like your first really super long match?
It felt weird. I was like, why am I liking this? And I think it has a lot to do with the two of them. Like, it was a long match, but there was still like, whenever I feel like there's a long match, there's a lot of stops and starts. I don't feel like it's ever fully stopped.
Yeah.
So like,
usually the best long matches don't feel like they're as long as they are.
Yeah, and that was like that. This one though, I did look up because at one point I was like, okay, this is getting long, and I was like, they've got to call time soon, like, you know, like but not that I was like looking for them to call time, but really just to be like, what is,
you know, what's the limit?
How are they going to end this? So
MJF, a tremendous heel at the end, like
easy dub.
Covered in ice packs with an oxygen tank and a mask. And he's like, didn't break a sweat. Easy dub. The pictures are hilarious of him like looking dead with an oxygen mask on, barely holding the title up. He's like, easy win. So funny. And then like all the America stuff he's been doing. He went, he just wrestled in Arena Mexico with this gimmick.
That's crazy.
Which got him tons and tons of heel heat, of course. And, you know, all you have to do in Mexico is go there and talk about, you know, your people invading our borders. Like, that's all you have to do to get massive heat there. And, you know, he got out of Mexico alive. But, like, that's the sort of stuff you do there. We got, I'm really looking forward to that match, though. I mean, the hour match was really good. And I don't expect that they go an hour here. My gut feeling, if I want to predict something, go out on a limb and do like a stunt bet or something. The last time something kind of like this happened was Bryan Danielson and Hangman, when Hangman was the world champion. And they did like an hour draw. And they did a second match that was nowhere near as long as that. It was like half the time at least. But Brian got busted open and was bleeding quite a bit. So like the story was like, you know, he didn't have his wherewithal, his stamina was lower.
Right.
You know, he was worn down more. And I wonder if they'll do something similar to that here. But we'll see. Mercedes Moné, Britt Baker for the TBS championship, another super heated, feud with, just like a really fun and great build. Mercedes has introduced Camille as like her heavy. And people like Camille is like one of the two people that were like, when is this person going to show up? The other being Megan Bain, although I'm told or I've read that her contract situation, if there even is a contract situation, is weird. She has not shown up. But Camille was one of those other one of the other people where it's like, we're pretty sure she signed with AEW, but where the heck is she? So she showed up here as kind of like the heavy for Mercedes. And I'm not sure where they go with this. Maybe Mercedes wins the first match.
Definitely think Mercedes wins the first match.
Yeah. But I'm excited for this. I'm I feel like it's going to be another really good one. It's another really great feud. Oh, it's going to be
fantastic.
The women's division in AEW is like picked up. I mean, it's clear like when they, Mercedes was a big signing for them, and creatively it was obvious like they were going to make a concerted effort to put more focus on the women's division, and they've done an excellent job. There are several other feuds going on right now. Willow and Statlander is good. Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo is going on right now. Even the stuff in Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor has always been heavy on women's wrestling, but there are several things there. Layla Hirsch and Diamante had a one of the craziest street fights on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Really?
Just like, I think Dave Meltzer gave it like 4 3/4. Like, and I would never have expected it from legit Layla Hirsch and Diamante, who were at one point fairly regular on AEW, but then kind of faded away. They had just a crazy street fight.
Okay.
Anyway, worth going out of your way to see if you can find it.
Well,
but yeah, a just undeniable heavy focus on the women's division, which is always great. And main event is title versus career. Strickland, Swerve Strickland defending against Bryan Danielson. I presume Bryan Danielson is going to fight the booking on this, putting him over until the bitter end. Because I'm pretty sure the idea here is Bryan Danielson is going to win.
But he's not like, his contract's up. So this is where I get I'm like, are they going to put the title on someone who isn't sticking around? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, because I think he is sticking around. I think he's going to sign a new contract, but I think it's going to, because like the thing is, he's not retiring. His plan was he wants to retire as a full-time wrestler. So he's still, I think the idea is that he's still going to be around.
Like back, right, and maybe do some more backstage stuff, but...
Yes, but he wants to spend more time with his family, things like that. So
yeah.
This is probably going to be his last full-time run. I'm positive they put the title on him, and I feel like he probably holds on to it until they do that Tacoma Dome show for WrestleDream a little bit later in the year. I would imagine that's when it happens, assuming, of course... Brian does not talk somebody out of like changing the finish for this match, which, you know, that's kind of been some of the jokes online. Cause like Brian Danielson doesn't care about going over. He wants to put over the other guys.
Right.
And it's like, dude, sometimes you got to look good. Sometimes you got to like look like a winner out there, or those losses don't mean a whole lot. if you start doing it. And, I know, like, I don't know Tony Khan, but I know Tony Khan's heart. And this is a guy that wants to make, you know, the American Dragon, Brian Danielson, from his days as an ROH fan. He wants to make that guy the champion of his company at least once.
Yep. 100%. There's no way.
He's buying the rights to Final Countdown. I'm positive we're going to hear that at Wembley. Like, he's going to go all out for that. So
I heard that song just like out in the wild recently.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, man, this is a really good. They should just play this during his whole match.
Yeah.
His whole match.
Yeah. But I'm
so good.
I'm excited for it. We haven't even.
Me too.
The last time we podcasted was before Forbidden Door happened. And
so many things.
Forbidden Door for me really solidified Swerve. Like, I was like, I think he's still trying to find his way. He's like a top guy. Like, he doesn't feel like a focal point. And then after that match with Ospreay, I'm like, okay. Like, yep, I see the vision now. Like, he feels like a top guy. He feels like the big name
in the company. Guy,
yeah, absolutely.
And Swerve to me was always like I was so excited. I still am so excited that he's champion. So yeah.
I'm not sure what obviously there's tons of people. I'm hoping they don't do the Acclaimed and the Young Bucks on Wembley, but they're owed a tag title match and it hasn't happened yet. So that's probably where it's happening, but I'm not amped. If that match gets booked for All In, that's the one I'm going to be least amped about. I love Bowens, but like I'm way over Max Caster. So
yeah.
I'm not looking forward to that. I'm sure they're going to find something for Okada to do.
Oh, for sure.
There has been this gimmick where Saraya has been nonstop talking about like I'm going there. You can't do this show without me. I'm going to be there. I don't care who I have to fight, like that sort of thing, which has opened up a lot of speculation that maybe it'll be some sort of open challenge. And this could mark the return of Jamie Hayter,
who has been gone
for a while. And like, just imagining Jamie Hayter returning to that crowd would be so great. So I feel like there's
so many things.
I'm really looking forward to the show.
It's going to be a great one.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I feel like it'll be way better than last year's, honestly. And I enjoyed last year's quite a bit, but I feel like this one is lining up to be way, way better. So excited for that. I guess we should leave it there.
On a happy note.
On a happy note. We're excited for something. Hooray!
Yay!
Well, we'll probably return to our normal format in a couple of weeks, because I don't think any PLEs or pay-per-views are happening before then. So it'll just be talking about what's going on in the world of wrestling outside of any big or major events. In the meantime, head on over to cinemageekly.com where you can check out the archives of the show. This is a listener-supported podcast, so if you'd like to help us out there, you can. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have a merch store, geeklymerch.com. The links for those are in the show notes for this episode. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and Pocket Casts. Anywhere you can find a good podcast, just search for The Heat, hit subscribe, and that way you can join us in the next fortnight, where we will talk about more the world of professional wrestling.